with his study, he comes back to Iran and start his lessons and also going up the member. And the main book that today, inshallah, we have dedicated that program with, Kibrit al-Ahmar fi Shara'it al-Member, is talking about the rituals, customs, and adab of the member. All for the one who is going up the member and those who are benefiting from the member.
They say that he had also mastery over the fatwas, we can say, verdicts of the other denominations of Islam, up to an extent that he establishes dialogue and conversations with them, answering them based on their own reasonings and their own books. It shows that he was really high caliber Ayatollah and Shaykh on that time. But as I said, since we are in the month of Muharram, and we want to talk more about Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, we are looking for an excuse to talk about him. What the best excuse than an author who compiled a work, or it's better to say his magnum opus, on Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Dr. Fakhruhani, Kibrit al-Ahmar fi Shara'it al-Minbar, we can say is the outstanding work of this man, Muhammad Baqir Qahani Birjandi. What is this book exactly?
Yes, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Sallallahu alayki wa abdullah, assalamu alayki wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. One of the outstanding features of the Shia denomination in the whole Islamic world is that a member isn't merely a pulpit or isn't merely a podium for delivering lectures. Rather, member is a place or a space given to a high-ranking cleric, Shia cleric, in order to educate people, in order to give them informal education. Education can be divided into formal education, as one may receive in high schools or universities, in contrast to informal education, which can be gained, in the mosques, masajid, or Husseinias, and so on. From this perspective, it must be indicated that when such a great dignitary like the late Ayatollah Qahani Birjandi, dedicated a book on the, qualifications or the necessary traits that any cleric must have in order to deliver a set of lectures on religious topics, while ascending to member, it indicates that this space shouldn't be left without its own standards. Rather, it must be quite well disciplined.
Especially when it is about Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, because the passionate aspect of the story of Karbala.
It proves more influential for people.
Yes.
Okay? Because, ordinary people may not accept anything when you say to them in the street. However, when they receive the same piece of information while listening to a lecture given to them from the top of a member, they would, in a great majority of cases, they accept.
Okay.
In this book, Kibrit al-Ahmar has got two main sections.
Yes.
Two major sections. One of them is concerned with the qualifications and status of member, and another one is the benefit and the virtues of giving advice to other people. Backed and supported by Quranic verses or authentic hadiths. And then another one, second chapter of the book talks about who may have the qualification, the right qualification, both from the point of piety or from the point of knowledge, to ascend a member in order to deliver a lecture from there.
That's all right.
The third chapter of the book talks
about... So there are two parts. Part one consists of four chapters.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Chapter three talks about... the qualifications expected from the audience to have. They must be ready. They must be in a state of alacrity in order to receive these lectures.
Okay.
And mainly, what must be observed in any commemorative session held in memory of the Ahlul Bayt. And the fourth chapter of the book talks about, I mean, various qualifications expected from a well-designed member in order to be influential for people.
That's all right. Yes. And the second part, I think we have some pieces of advice, you know, how to preach for Imam al-Hussein or something like that.
Yes. In the second part of the book, I mean, three important, I mean, topics or, I mean, standards are given in that, how, for example, the sad aspects of the life and times of the infallibles should be given. Mm-hmm. Another one is concerned with some other characteristics are concerned with the guidance oriented aspects of delivering lectures and how to manage,
a nice ceremony for Imam al-Hussein.
Yes, for example, university professors, when they enter their own classes, they must be able how to start the lecture, how to develop the topic, and how to come to a conclusion at the end of the session.
That's all right.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban li Ali wa Hussein wa Hassan. Li Ali wa Hussein wa Hassan. Kullu man
ka. Sheikh Mahtavi, we can say in this way, the member and giving a speech on Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam on a pulpit, but the orators and we can say the speakers and the presenters is really a serious task, as Ayatollah Bijandi believed in, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. That is a serious task, and it gives more emphasis when we look at the position of Ayatollah Bijandi. Mm-hmm. Sometimes some average level scholars may author some books regarding Imam Hussein, but when you see a scholar who has reached the level of ijtihad and got permission from outstanding scholars like Mirza-i Shirazi for the ijtihad, then under the supervision of his ustad, that it is because it is mentioned that Mirza-i Shirazi is indicating, or it's better to say Mirza-i Shirazi is offering that with this knowledge and this skill for you, it's better to start writing. Mm-hmm. And when he offers the first copy of his book, not specifically this book, but the one of the book, because his books reach 70 volumes in different fields of studies.
Yes.
So with this position to master different knowledges and different sciences regarding the religious sciences, you see, we have the book regarding the how to observe the conditions and situation in relation to Member al-Hussein.
Or Majlis al-Hussein.
Yes, or Majlis al-Hussein. So it will emphasize the position of this point.
Yes.
That is not an easy task to be taken by any scholar any level.
So you mean it needs its own experts in order to go on member and give a speech, and not any maybe not any type of, we can say, a scholar or an alim is capable or talented enough or powerful enough in a speech to give on member, especially in the case of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, which we can say has the passion and the knowledge and the historical, we can say, knowledge is very much needed.
And sometimes we see that there are some distortion.
Okay,
that
very
have
good.
Taken place,
and distortions, that's
right. In the history of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his martyrdom and his loyal companions. Okay. So you have to reach the level of expertise in order to differentiate between the truth and false stories. Mm-hmm. That's why we see one of the subjects that he deals with in his book is about the distortions.
That's right. Continuing the path of his master, Muhaddis al-Nuri, on the book Lolo var Marjan, Lolo and Marjan, because that book was also about answering such deviations and distortions which found their way into the story of Karbala and Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. And unfortunately, sometimes on the manaber and the majalis of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam are being reiterated, which are absolutely wrong. And Muhammad Baqir Birchandi can say tries to answer such deviations, distortions, and misunderstandings about Imam Al Hussein alayhi salam in Kibrit Ahmar fi Sharait Al Manbar. What does Kibrit Ahmar refer to over here in this title?
Yes, this Kibrit Al Ahmar, as we have the equivalent in English, Kibrit Al Ahmar, better to explain it for our listeners, means that stone that magician were looking after in order to change copper into gold. So it's a metaphoric name, got its literal meaning, red sulfur.
Yes.
But the metaphorical meaning of that is that stone that they were looking after in order to change copper into gold.
So you mean Muhammad Baqir Mirjandi can say...
To make a shortcut
If someone wants to get a member...
Yeah.
And being a nice presenter on Imam Al Hussein alayhi salam, he needs to make his copper into gold, isn't it?
Yes, and whatever he is in need of, find it.
Okay.
Find it
in order to improve yourself, is better to say. That's all right, really nice title. Dr. Farhwani, anything missed about this book or Sheikh Muhammad Baqir Birjandi?
One point is that, synopsis of the book, or for example, a brief version of these books should be put into English.
Yes.
Because, yes. I mean, nowadays we find that in English-speaking nations, some Shia orators send members or go to the podium in order to deliver lectures.
Yes.
And in order to prevent them from making some inadvertent mistakes, it's necessary to provide them with this kind of experience, related or, for example, reported in this region of the world. Perhaps some of these, anecdotes or suggestions may help them not to go astray while delivering such lectures. Yes.
Especially nowadays that the members are replaced with some of the virtual, we can say, on the social media member or something like that. But we know that the member for Imam Al Hussein alayhi salam needs its own qualifications, the starting point, we can say, the stories that are mentioned, even the eulogies and the elegies and the lamentations that are done for Imam Al Hussein alayhi salam have their own etiquettes. So all of these etiquettes have to be observed according to religious laws and Islamic laws. And if they are not observed, truly, they are deviated from the right path.
Certainly.
That's all right.
Thank you
much, Dr. Muhammad Reza Fakhrani and Sheikh Mahtavi, for your presence in the program, The Teacher, about Muhammad Baqir Birjandi, the author of the magnum opus, Kibrit al-Ahmar fi Sharait al-Manbar, which was about the best qualifications, or better say, attributes of giving a good lecture on the manbar about Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. This outstanding man, that is the late Ayatollah Muhammad Baqir Birjandi, passed away on Zilhajjah 14, the year 1352, according to the lunar Hiji calendar, at the age of 56. His body, we can say, was taken to a Madrasa Elmiya, or Islamic school, Islamic seminary of the Birjand called Masumiya, and he was buried in a special chamber or gravesite, which is, we can say, place for them, and he was buried in the school, in the same school. May Allah bless the soul of this outstanding man and all the people who dedicated their lives to write and to work on the Islamic sciences, Islamic knowledge, especially about Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, this true legacy for the whole Muslim world to learn from and to benefit from. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program, The Teacher. To another episode and introducing another Shiite dignitary who compiled a work, at least, about Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. God bless you all. Fi amanillah. Assalamu alayka ya Abu Abdullah al-Hussein.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
An inflatable building that explores how people would potentially live on Mars
has been unveiled in the British city of Bristol. It's a two-story structure with an area of 570 square feet, powered by solar panels. It's designed to cope with temperatures as low as minus 63 degrees Celsius. Although the Martian house will be displayed above ground, its lower level will be fully buried to maximize protection against the harsh environment of Mars. Inside, the top floor features a hydroponic living room filled with decorative plants that feed into a circular wastewater system. A team of experts helped develop the design, taking into consideration the complexity of transporting materials to the Red Planet and what is already there.
So in the gold inflatable structure which you see above you, that's the main living space of the Martian house. It's gold to reflect dangerous solar rays and cosmic radiation, and it's inflatable because it would be filled with a special concrete made of the dust and water that you find on Mars, again to protect you from those dangerous solar and cosmic rays.
The Martian house was envisioned by local artists 7 years ago. The artists also brought together space scientists, architects, engineers, designers, and even school children. The space age dwelling explores what a house on Mars could be like and is meant to for research and experiments about the future. The major objective of the project, however, is to provoke questions about living more sustainably with the resources at hand here on Earth. Japanese plastic food artisans are showcasing their mouth-watering artificial creations at an exhibition in Japan's capital city, Tokyo. From the Leaning Tower of Pizza to fish slicing and cooking, or even the quirky stacked pancakes, you can find almost everything at the exhibit. Other sculptors, including a deep-fried shrimp with four breaded legs, scaling a mountain of shredded cabbage like a tiger. Another creation on display is a Tetris game made of chicken. Plastic food artists get really excited for the exhibition each year as they are given a chance to practice their own spin on creativity, bringing food to life with curious characters.
So normally we have to follow orders from clients. We take their views on board when we're making items. Normally that's our work. But for the competition, you can use your imagination. How it finally ends up is totally up to you. I like that aspect of it.
There are some 60 sculptors on display. Some are silly, but others highlight the artist's skills. The models were made with the same careful detail as the rock-solid noodle soups and crispy-looking plastic snacks on display outside Japanese restaurants. There is a lucrative business for them in Japan.
Deforest management plays a key role in mitigating climate change. Like many world countries, China has accelerated environmental and social structural changes in urban spaces to deal with this pertinent issue. The Donggu Forest Park is one such project that has provided city dwellers enough space to breathe. It comes into being from what local people usually called rotten woods. The park on the northern bank of the Xialinge River covers an area of nearly 120 hectares. Nobody would come there before, as the place was full of flies and mosquitoes. But now, with the environment improved and water cleaned in the river, the place has turned into a wonderland, attracting locals and even foreign tourists.
Now the sky is blue, the water clean and the air fresh, with green greeting you wherever you go. The elderly play Tai Chi or do bodybuilding exercises here. Young people play football, basketball and table tennis.
Over the past 20 years, a large number of cities in China have undergone a brief but rapid urban expansion. Most of these cities are now facing social problems such as an aging population and a high prevalence of chronic diseases. A comprehensive environmental improvement program in the area was initiated in 2014 in order to create space for those who want to take a break from their everyday works.
Whilst not being as painful as a broken limb, animals like humans suffer from chronic and acute pain from gum infections, broken teeth, and bacterial spread through the circulation. A 16-year-old elephant in Pakistan is one such case. Madhubala, suffering for years from a dental infection caused by a broken tusk, has finally got relief thanks to vets, dentists. Named after a legendary Indian actress, Madhubala's eyes were taped shut, her legs tied to support her during sedation and subsequent treatment at a Karachi zoo. The vets had to use drills and other heavy surgical tools to extract the infected tusk. She is one of four African elephants being treated in Karachi by an eight-member team from Global Animal Welfare Group, Four Paws. A Pakistani court last year asked Four Paws to assess the health of the animals after local animal rights activists raised concerns about their well-being. England's Paradise Wildlife Park welcomes its new guest, an endangered red panda cub. The mother, Tilly, gave birth to the cub just 1 month after she lost her breeding partner, Nampang. Experts say Tilly had been under a breeding project for 4 years. The cub has been named Little Red, and his birth is being celebrated as a, quote, symbol of hope. Red pandas are classed as an endangered species and are on the red list of the International Union for Conservation of Nature. The bushy-tailed bamboo munchers dwell in high-altitude Asian forests, and their population is now fewer than 2,500. Lightning strikes are very powerful and misunderstood force of nature that we all often see being used in films. A spectacular lightning strike has illuminated the sky over the Scottish town of Dundee. A video from an eyewitness that captured the hypnotic scene has been shared on several social media platforms. The lightning in the clip can be seen sending several bolts in opposite directions. Below, a church spire is silhouetted against the lightning flashes. But lightning is not always spectacular, as sometimes it causes fire to tower and high rises. Last month, a wind turbine caught fire after being struck by a lightning bolt in North Texas, United States.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Forestry authorities in southwestern China have opened a new canteen for wild Asian elephants in a bid to stop them wandering into villages. The canteen in Yunnan province provides the animals with attractive and nutritious meals while exploring man-animal harmonious coexistence. During these years, the province has explored multiple ways to reduce the encounters between humans and elephants and try to keep the animals away from farmers' crops. There are now approximately 1,400 hectares of dining halls for elephants, with many expanding from 100 to 240, such as corn, rice, and sugarcane. They are planted on a large scale and within easy reach of the elephants. The location of such canteens is extremely selective, usually away from villages and major roads, and the chefs are locals.
Stunning scenes in Spain as the last supermoon of the year illuminates the night sky amid fireworks and fairs marking the start of festivities for a public holiday. In Malaga, fireworks left the sky a mix of colours against the bright moon. There was also a spectacle of drones that lightened the sturgeon moon. Locals in the Canary Islands also celebrated the three-day holiday by lighting up a Ferris wheel as the full moon beamed beautifully in the sky. If the moon is within 10% of its closest distance to Earth at the moment of full moon, it is called a supermoon. The supermoon has various hues and appears bigger and brighter than when the moon is at its farthest point from Earth. Have you ever heard of fighting nature with nature? Well, that's what the San Francisco metro system in the U.S. did to stop pigeons from overrunning the place. The station has hired a hawk as the new guard to patrol the area. Pac-Man is a 5-year-old Harris's hawk who has taken up the perch at the station. In terms of experience, he is pretty new as he finished training only 9 months ago. The station recently renovated its building, installing netting and spikes to prevent pigeons from nesting. But these birds still seem to find their way to hang around. So with the Falconer Force, Ricky Ortiz and his hawk were hired this summer to keep the pigeons at bay.
So a typical day is we get here, we make our round, we start off down in the bottom inside the facility, making sure there's no pigeons hanging out in there. And then we work our way up here to the platforms and just check the ledges and the roof and make sure that they're not trying to sneak in on us and keep them out. And he does a pretty good job of that.
The team patrols 3 days a week and Pac-Man is allowed to swoop in and scare any pigeons sitting around. The Falconer says less than half of the pigeons they left after the first week of Pac-Man flying and establishing the territory. Commuters and station managers say they also noticed the difference. The Falconer says he usually keeps his feathery friend happy on the job by giving him snacks throughout the day. This also encourages the hawk not to feast on the pigeons and local rodents.
Technology helps transform the global food production system and mitigates its impact on the environment. China's autonomous region of Tibet is turning barren land into fertile one using greenhouse technology. Once removed, Beinan County is now the largest off-season vegetable supplier in Tibet. The region has taken advantage of its highland conditions to develop a state-of-the-art agricultural structure. Beinong has now more than 2,200 modern vegetable greenhouses and nearly 12,000 hectares of planting area, some built at unimaginable altitude. But one cannot deny the role of railways and highway transport for making this county a hub for organic vegetables. The income of locals has also been significantly improved, and they are now living a happy and prosperous life. If you're a private collector of wild animals, there is good news for you. A Pakistani zoo is auctioning off a dozen lions due to a lack of money to feed them and a space to house them. Lahore Safari Zoo currently has so many big cats that they have to take turns accessing paddocks. Officials say auctioning them will free up space and also reduce expenses. Zoo is currently housing 29 lions. The lions auctioned this week will be between 2 to 5 years of age. Each big cat is estimated to fetch around 150,000 Pakistan rupees. That's not too much, as some zookeepers claim. Even conservationists have expressed anger over auctioning lions to private collectors instead of transferring them to other zoos.
ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره، همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم امر الله سبحانه الا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
In the name of Allah, Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. Welcome to this segment of To My Brother. My name is Muhammad. After returning from the Battle of Siffin, Imam Ali gave certain pieces of advice to one of his sons. Historians consider him to be Imam Hassan alayhi salam, while others are of the opinion that he was Muhammadul Hanafi. He wrote this letter in the form of a will. They deal with almost every aspect of life, which goes a long way to make a man successful in life, brave, humane, generous, virtuous, and pious. Today, I'm going to read to you an excerpt from the last will of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please stay with us. My dear son, take care to provide well for your future abode. Do not barter away eternal blessing for pleasures of this mortal and fleeting world. Do not talk about things which you do not know. Do not speculate about and pass verdicts on subjects about which you are not in a position to form an opinion and are not called upon to do so. Give up the way where there is a possibility of your going astray. When there is danger on your wandering in the wilderness of ignorance, possibility of losing the sight of the goal which you want to attain and of reaching the end aimed at, then it is better to give up the quest than to advance facing uncertain dangers and unforeseen risks. Advise people to do good and live virtuously because you are fit to give such advice. Let your words and deeds teach the world lessons of how to abstain from wickedness and vicious deeds. Try your best to keep away from those who indulge in vices and sins. Fight whenever required to defend the cause of Allah. When you think of defending the cause of Allah, do not be afraid that people will laugh at you, censure your action, or slander you. Fearlessly and boldly help truth and justice. Bear patiently the sufferings and face bravely the obstacles which come in your way when you follow truth and when you try to uphold it. Adhere to the cause of truth and justice wherever you find it. Try to be well versed with Islamic jurisprudence and theology and acquire a thorough knowledge of the canons of this religion.
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio. The program is To My Brother, and we are discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. Dear friends, Imam Ali alayhi salam and his universal persona, this persona which has surpassed the pages of history and has surpassed the time and eras of centuries gone past. But the realities that the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam is, and the realities which he speaks about, are realities that also surpass time and age. There has always been a difference between the knowledgeable and the ignorant. And we learn from Imam Ali's universal persona about the characteristics and qualities of those that have chosen the path of ignorance. Imam Ali speaks about these individuals and says that they are entangled in the confusion of doubts, like one who is entangled in the spider's web, not knowing whether they are right or wrong. The individual, if they are correct, they fear that they might have made a mistake. And if the person is wrong, they hope that they are correct. And so this individual ends up being ignorant, wandering astray in ignorance and riding on carriages aimlessly, moving in the darkness, and they don't even try to find the reality of knowledge. We find, dear brothers and sisters, that this is one of the characteristics and one of the attributes that have been given to us about the ignorant by Imam Ali alayhi salam and his universal persona. This idea that an individual who is engulfed in the darkness and the veils of ignorance really is lost aimlessly in the darkness. They don't know that they are correct, and they don't know if they are wrong. As an individual, every single one of us must try our best to seek out knowledge, for if we do not have the appropriate knowledge in our lives, we will remain in these veils of darkness and will never be able to distinguish between truth and falsehood, and we will not be able to distinguish between right and wrong. And here, as Imam Ali alayhi salam said, one of the fundamental qualities of an individual who is ignorant is that they do not try to even find and search for the reality of knowledge. And so we should learn from this that at every single point of our life, we must be in search for the reality of knowledge and wisdom. Of course, the source is Allah, and the teachings are given to us by Muhammad and the family of Muhammad. Another profound lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of iRib English Radio, the program To My Brother. I'm Atta, the producer of this program, and at this moment, I invite you to listen to the Arabic text of Ziyara Aminullah along with the English translation. Please stay tuned.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم فاستجب دعائي واقبل ثنائي واجمع بيني وبين
O Allah, give favorable answer to my prayer. Acknowledge the praise I sign in worship. Let there be peace and harmony between me and my friends for the sake of Muhammad, Ali, Fatima, Al-Hassan, and Al-Hussein. Verily, thou art my benefactor who provides with bounties, the aim of my desires, the ultimate destination of my hopes in my future life and during this short life. Thou art my God, my master and my Lord. Welcome my friends, keep our enemies away from us. To save us from the evil mischief, divert their attention. Let the true world come out in the open, supreme and dominant. Refute and condemn the folly, rendered contemptible. Verily, thou art able to do all things.
إنك على كل شيء قدير.
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I would like to take this opportunity to talk about one dimension of the personality of Amir al-Mu'mineen, and that is the universal aspect of his personality. Quran is a miracle given to Rasul, and Ali is also a miracle given to Rasul. Quran is a universal book, then Ali is a universal personality. When you look at this concept of Quran being the universal book, what it means is that this is the last revelation of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. There were revelations which came before, and they were true. We cannot be a Muslim if we deny the truth of Torah and Injil and the books which came before. But then this was the final one. With coming of the Quran, everything else is to be respected. But when it comes to implementation, it is the Quran. This is the era of the Quran. And with the last prophet, this became the last book. It is universal in a sense that it is not bound by time and space. It is not only for the people who lived during the days of the prophet. Quran is not a source of guidance only for the Arabian Peninsula or for the people who lived in the 7th century. It is a source of guidance for all the people till the day of Qiyamah and all parts of the world. That is the meaning of universality of the Quran. When you look at Amir al-Mu'mineen, He is a universal personality in a sense that his life and his words and the examples that he provided in the short life that he had, especially in the last 5 years of his Khilafat, these are not bound by time and space. The example of Amir al-Mu'mineen, the words of wisdom and whatever he left behind as a legacy, this has acquired its own universal form. It is applicable and a source of guidance for all the people and for all parts of the world.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. Stay tuned.
آقایون خواهرها تو گرفتاری های مادی جسمی ارتباط معنوی داشته باشید.
The family of Hazrat Fatima to Zahra is admired by Allah in Surah Al-Insan, Ayah 8. One of the main reasons is their trust in Allah when facing a problem in life. The behavior of Imam Ali alayhi salam and Hazrat Fatima al-Zahra salamullah alayha shows us how to have hope in Allah and to strengthen our spiritual relation to Allah. Now, some people lose their hope when they become sick or they face a problem in life. This family also was fearful of Allah's chastisement on the Day of Judgment.
این خانواده‌ای که بهشت در انتظار اینهاست از شر قیامت می‌ترسند.
Although they were the most righteous people of Islam and their presence in heaven is guaranteed by Allah, they never disobeyed Allah and they always were humble before Allah. This is a good lesson for today's family. If we believe in the other world, then we will be more careful about the consequences of our bad deeds. Sense of awe and fear before Allah helps us to be more cautious in life. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulema's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com/en Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Worst humanitarian crisis in the world.
Part 1.
Big dreams burn down in these flames. The dreams of a young man who wanted to conquer the world with petrodollars and an iron fist. On June 21st, 2017, international media reported that a silent coup was underway in the corridors of power in Riyadh. King Salman, the ailing Saudi monarch, deposed Mohammed bin Nayef, the crown prince, and his nephew, and replaced him with his own son, Mohammed bin Salman. But for many, it wasn't news. On January 10th, 2016, The Independent had published an article from Germany's intelligence agency that said they expected King Salman to officially introduce bin Salman as his successor and delegate power. At that time, almost 10 months had passed since the Saudi aggression on Yemen. During the 10 months, the horrifying aspects of the humanitarian crisis came to light. On June 14, 2015, 2 months after the war, the UN Office for Humanitarian Affairs reported the spread of dengue fever in Yemen and the deaths of 113 people. Only a few weeks later, on July 1st, the UN described Yemen as the worst humanitarian crisis in the world. Over 80% of the people needed immediate food and medical aid. The country is just one step away from famine. By besieging Yemen, bin Salman wanted to check the strength of the Ansarullah and Houthi forces and also trigger a popular uprising against the Ansarullah by cutting food supplies. Since the Saudi pilots weren't skillful enough, Saudi bombs would constantly target children, women, schools, and wedding ceremonies. Human Rights Watch reported that 309 civilians were killed in airstrikes until August 30, 2015, less than 6 months since the war. What did Mohammed bin Salman want with this poor nation that's on the verge of famine? How would he benefit from the lethal and bloody airstrikes? Some believe that he had his big dream, the dream of turning Saudi Arabia into the biggest power in the region and turning himself into the most powerful man in West Asia. But his dream faced a big hurdle. Iran, a country that's naturally been the heavyweight in the region for centuries. The Saudis accused Iran of intervention in Yemen and seek to introduce Ansarullah as evidence of Iran's influence in the region. It seems history is repeating itself. The story of Iran in Yemen has started once again. Ali Abdullah Saleh ruled Yemen for 3 decades. Before that, he was the president of North Yemen for many years. This is the museum he established to mark his own presidency after he resigned. His resignation did not mean that he wouldn't return to Yemen's political arena. Saleh had surrendered during the revolution in Yemen and delegated power to Abu Rabu Mansur Hadi and left the country for the U.S. under the pretext of medical treatment. On February 19, 2014, UN envoy Jamal Ben Omar announced that Saleh could take part in the upcoming elections in Yemen. At that time, Saleh was pursuing his own goals and got closer to the Houthis to make a unity with them. In terms of tribal divisions, the Houthis are Zaydis, just like him, and more importantly, they're considered Yemen's main power. If he sought a future in Yemen, he had to form an alliance with the Houthis. The coalition was eventually formed on August 10, 2016, between the Houthis and Ali Abdullah Saleh. The coalition was aimed at putting up a resistance front against Saudi raids. Parts of the Yemeni army still took orders from Saleh. The Houthis needed his power for the war. Saleh, too, needed the Houthis' influence in order to regain power. As long as they could find a solution for the Saudi attacks, it was a win-win situation for both sides. But the Ansarullah leader didn't trust Saleh that much. He had to choose either of the two. Mohammed bin Salman, an ambitious Saudi young man who had launched an invasion on Yemen with all of its force on the one hand, and Ali Abdullah Saleh, a Yemeni dictator who was ready to join him in the fight against Saudi Arabia for now. October 8, 2016, some horrifying news from Yemen left the world in shock. Saudi forces bombed a funeral ceremony. 155 people were killed and 525 people were wounded. The number of fatalities on that day was more than half of the fatalities during the first 2 months of Saudi airstrikes on Yemen.